morning, everyone. The committee will come to order. Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection for Tuesday, March 8th, 2011. We originally had and had put notice out for two bills on the agenda, but something had come up with Senator Rest's bill, and she needed a little bit more time to work on that, so we pulled that from the agenda, which means today we have one bill before us, and that would be Senate File 524. So, Senator Jungbauer, why don't you take it from here? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Just happy to be here with a bill. I mean, this is fun. Members, those of you that have been here a while will not be able to see my normal speed presentation. I'm quite well known around the Capitol for doing the shortest presentations of any bills. However, this one requires a little more time. I think my record for a bill presentation was 28 seconds. So, and then let you guys drive the questions, of course. But this one takes a little bit more time. So we will take a little bit more time, and I apologize. And, you know, I've tried to instruct people, too, that if we get off in the weeds, that this is the only committee standing between people and their lunch. So we want to make sure that we're respectful of your time, although with one bill, I think we're fine today. So, members, what Senate File 524 does is, in the contracting and property management business, there's property managers in Minnesota aren't licensed. In some states are licensed, like realtors and builders, and they come under certain laws and certain scrutiny. In Minnesota, they don't have that same scrutiny. And so, like a lot of things, there's some bad players. Some bad players are looking for loopholes where they can profit off of. And again, like anything else, most people that are out there doing stuff are just honest, ethical, above board, and want to do everything right. But in this hard time, you know, a lot of people are looking for how can we make an extra buck, and this one seeks to close some loopholes where some property managers have been making some extra money without disclosing to people what's going on, and we have testifiers that will testify to that. So we are, I'll walk through a little bit of Senate File 524 and try to tell you as members what we're trying to do here. Obviously, Section 1 has some definitions. Subdivision 2, prohibition of ownership of certain forms. I'm going to read through it and then talk about what it means. No property manager or property management company having an interest directly or indirectly in a construction firm, salvage firm, or appraisal firm may hire the directly or indirectly owned construction firm, salvage firm, or appraisal firm to perform work on a managed property unless consented to in writing by the owner or owners. Firm includes a corporation, partnership, association, or individual firm. So, members, what this means is if you're a property management company and that's your relationship with, say, a townhouse association, I'll use that as an example, and you also own a construction firm, if the townhouse association has been hit by something like hail and has a lot of damage, since you have that fiduciary responsibility of managing the property, you are not would not be allowed to then contract your own firm to come in and fix that kind of damage. And the reason, members, is this, is since you have that fiduciary responsibility, you're sending things out for bids, you're working with the insurance company, you know what the settlement is, A, and then you know what the bids are. So you can't come in and then all of a sudden do a little bit lower bid just to get your firm to be able to come in and profit from that. But furthermore, what you're going to find out from testimony, what some unethical folks have been doing is running a general contracting firm and then going out and saying to other people, okay, our bid is, and I'll use round numbers, members, our bid is $10,000. If you come in and do it for $8,000 and give me the $2,000 difference, I'll let you have the job. And that's the kind of stuff that's happening. And why I don't believe that's a good thing is that you don't know what kind of work you're getting, A, and you're really kind of playing with insurance company settlements that shouldn't be played with. We know what the general contracting firms are charging out there. And now when people are taking this kickback, we call it pay to play, you're getting a kickback to let somebody come in and do the job. You don't know what kind of job is getting done. So that's kind of what we're talking about there is why you shouldn't be able to then contract directly. Unless, of course, as I say here, that it's consented to in writing. So if you're trying to be ethical, if you're trying to be moral, if you're trying to play by the rules, if you disclose everything in writing like you do in building or real estate where you're licensed, then again, you have that opportunity to come in and do this. So then subdivision 3 is prohibited practices. Unless consented to in writing by the owner or owners, no property manager or property management company shall request or accept money, rebates, or anything of value from a construction firm, salvage firm, or appraisal firm. As, and then we go through inducement to refer business, condition for awarding the contract, part of the fee specified in a contract, or fee splitting for services rendered. It's again reiterating kind of the same thing that I talked about, members, is everything should be disclosed in writing, and this does not allow you to take a payback virtually under the table to say that we're, if you give me X amount of dollars, we'll let you have the job. I don't believe that's ethical or moral, or and especially when we get into insurance settlements, I believe that you are kind of dictating the type of work you're potentially getting on the project, which as a property manager, you have entered into a fiduciary responsibility with that company, whether it's a townhouse firm, condominium firm, those kind of things, and you are there to represent the owners of the building. We have a question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, I understand the importance of disclosure. And, for example, in the, a realty transaction, it's important to disclose, you know, the realtors working for the buyer, working for the seller, and in a case where a real estate company is representing through different agents, both the buyer and seller, that's disclosed. Disclosure is a really important thing. I'm concerned about this is actually going one step farther than disclosure. This is actually saying you may not, and that seems to fly in the face of the values that we hold as, you know, in our country with regard to freedom of the markets, freedom of many different things.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, it does not say you may not. It says you may if you disclose. And Senator, in real estate transactions, if you own a title company,
Senator Jungbauer, I think you might have just misspoken. It's not with you may with disclose. It's you may if you have permission from the owners. I think is what you meant to say.
And that's really what you're doing under disclosure law today, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff. Under real estate disclosure laws, you literally are signing off a disclosure so that you're showing in writing that all the parties to the transaction know what's going on. In when you're building, the reason you do those disclosures in writing is and having owners sign off is so that all parties to the transaction, as it's referred to in that case, know that that's going on. Again, whether you're in real estate, I'm using the example, if you own a title company, if you own a mortgage company and you're using those services, you're disclosing that you have a relationship there with those other services. And that's what we're asking here is that you disclose that relationship.
Senator Bonhoff.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Jungbauer, again, I would be for a bill that requires disclosure. I think this bill goes one step farther than that, and I find it problematic.
Well, Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator, if you have a way to talk through that, because I think we've done it similar to what's in real estate and building, and we've, you know, described all the details around that, but I'm very open to being certain that we're not going overboard, but we're making sure that we have a disclosure that is signed off by owners in writing, so that if something should go to court, that we would have a way to prove that that disclosure did in fact occur.
Senator Jungbauer, maybe I might shed some light on this, just to be clear in the bill and Senator Bonhoff. In real estate, there's a lot of disclosures, but a disclosure is and you might sign that to show that you have received this disclosure, but you're not consenting to anything in it. Senator Jungbauer, your bill, and this is what we'll discuss today here, is it does say in lines 1.19, consent in writing, lines 1.21, unless consented to in writing. So a consent is I think I'd agree with Senator Bonhoff, that's a step higher than just simply disclosure. So if your goal is simply disclosure, then we'd probably, you know, do something with this. But if your goal is to have consent, not just disclosure, but have consent, then I think your bill is drafted correctly. So you just let us know what your intent is and your design, and then that's what we can discuss what the appropriate level of intervention here is, whether it's simply disclosure or also consent. Does that help clarify things, Senator Bonhoff?
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, maybe Senate Counsel can help us, because having been in real estate and building for 25 years, I believe it's disclosure. It's called disclosure, but it is consent in writing, because you are consenting to the fact when you have, whether it's you're representing buyer or seller, you're letting a party to the transaction know and consent to in writing that they're aware of that relationship, the agency relationship. If you create what's called a dual agency, you are consenting to in writing and disclosing. Though we call them disclosure forms, they are signed so that it is a consent in writing that you are made aware of that relationship. And again, you are disclosing and requiring parties of the transaction to sign that you're aware of the relationship as a mortgage company or a title company or other peripheral services that you offer in those cases. So I'm assuming that though it's called a disclosure form, it is also a consent, or it would not need to be signed by the parties of the transaction. So again, trying to mirror that, and looking over at Senator Thompson there, maybe he's got some input on this, but though we call them a disclosure form, if you did not need to have it consented to in writing, I doubt that we'd need the parties to the transaction to sign that disclosure form.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Jungbauer, I do have some concern about the consented language, and I'm not an attorney, so I don't know the answer to this, but if someone does consent without really understanding what they're doing, and down the road they're not happy with the fact they consented to a property manager using his own firm to do the work, down the road, do they have any options once they've consented to take this to court if they're not happy with the work? I would have to agree that I understand that disclosing is one thing, but if they've consented to it, I don't know what options they would have down the road if they weren't happy with it. Can you comment on that?
Senator Jungbauer?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, I believe we've left it open under remedies in subdivision 4 for that to be to look at that sort of an issue. So there again, I'm not, myself not being an attorney, I'm not sure how all that works, but just so members know that I was here involved in the real estate transfer disclosure statements. In a lot of that agency law, I was a governmental affairs for the North Metro Realtors Association. I was on governmental affairs for the Builders Association, so I was involved in the discussions and many discussions from 1992 on at the Capitol as many of those kind of forms were put together that affected my business as a realtor and builder. And believe me, that's where I got used to all these disclosures and having people sign disclosures when you're not only a realtor but a builder doing the building and selling the people the house and the land and those sorts of things. So I don't believe anything's in here that's not required of our already licensed folks, whether it's real estate or building. So,
Senator Brown for a follow-up?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question, again, if you look at lines 2.6 and 2.7, if client does consent, if they sign a consent, in my opinion, then the property manager wouldn't be violating this section.
Right. Okay.
Is that accurate?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, between in this bill, but I believe there's, as we look through it in other sections of law, there's always remedies for that sort of thing, and maybe if you don't want to get in this kind of trouble, you want to make sure you're not getting into that kind of a contract when that disclosure or consent, as it were, comes into play. And so I think you do need to be very careful as you enter into things when you're trying to represent the fiduciary responsibilities or have a fiduciary relationship with a association or other group on one side, and you're trying to also contract for other work on the other side. There's always that tug and that play as to whether or not you can represent the best interests of both sides of what you're doing on a transaction equally well without getting yourself into potential litigation. So I believe most of that exists under our current law structure.
Okay. I guess my concern is just the majority of property management companies are probably very reputable. It's the shady ones, I feel, that would take advantage possibly of this, and that's my concern.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, most of the laws we do draft around here are to take care of shady people, and even at best, the laws we create can't solve 100% of issues. We are lucky if we can get our hands around 80% of a problem in something. It's just tough to get the language that totally takes an issue out of a circulation, if you will.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I kind of stumble when I get to subdivision 3. And because it says this is prohibited unless the person consents. So in other words, you can take a kickback if you've made a disclosure that you have an interest in the company that's going to be doing the work. So it's okay to get a rebate or money or... So how do you see that being worded to the owner? I mean, what's this property manager going to say? You know, I'm going to have my brother-in-law do this work. If you sign here, you've received notice, and you're saying, well, consent, you know, works the same way. I think it doesn't, but no. And there is no remedy if the person signs that disclosure statement. So what's protected here? I mean, I think a lot of people would say, well, you know, he's my brother-in-law, but he's really got the best rates, and he does really good work, and da-da-da-da, and owners just want the problem resolved. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, there's a number of remedies under fraud, under misrepresentation, under other contract statutes. It's hard to word this because, again, in real estate, when you have that disclosure, and I would argue the disclosure is also a consent since it's signed to in writing, when you own a mortgage company and you know the real estate company is getting a portion of that back under the mortgage company, if they own a title company and you know that's, again, a potential to get a portion back. So it's hard to find words that allow it because it already exists in real estate in some ways without... I guess I was at a loss of you know how to try to find those correlations and word it so that if people were aware that it was happening. Although I think, again, under insurance, I think we have insurance law that takes care of some of this, and I think if things could be reported or people weren't afraid to report it, that some of the insurance laws would take care of some of this issue that's going on as well. You would certainly think insurance companies would be aghast at the things that are going on.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Stang was going to get some language from the real estate disclosure. Do we use the word consent interchangeably? If you could, Mr. Chairman, if you could have
Mr. Stang. Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid, I was just looking at the agency disclosure form you have to sign in the real estate law that I think you might have worked on several years ago. But it requires you to sign it, I think, just to indicate that you've received it and maybe read it, but it's not really a consent to anything in the sense that I read this bill as requiring a affirmative consent for these transactions to take place.
Senator Scheid, I think the reason you sign those is it's protection for the agent. So you can put it in your file so that when a customer says, well, you never told me such and such, you can show that. I think it is. So, I think, Senator Jungbar, I think when you sign those real estate disclosures that you're not consenting to anything, you don't consent to dual agency, you don't consent to other disclosures until you sign the representation agreement. At that time, that's the only contract. The disclosures aren't any sort of an agreement or consent, or there's no action there. It's the buyer rep agreement or the listing contract. That's where you're actually signing and saying, okay, I'm good to go.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I think what we're doing though is we're saying there's some people out there. excuse me, conducting some shady, or conducting themselves. I'm sorry, I've lost my voice. I'll get a throat lozenge and I'll come back. Go ahead. I was thinking it might be helpful to hear from the proponents.
We will get to that. Senator Vandeveer had a question. Did you want to ask that now, or do you want to wait till the folks testify? Or?
I didn't. You've covered most of it. I think the issue is the difference between the disclosure and the agreement to with it, and I think we'll probably learn more about that maybe from the testimony.
Okay. Well, Senator Jungbauer, you've explained the bill. We've had some committee questions. I know you have an amendment, and I know you have testifiers. So what would you like to do first?
Well, Mr. Chair, why don't we move on with some testifiers and members, as you think through some of these things, I'm open to, and it was been very clear since I introduced the bill, and I'm very open to amendments. So if we're although I disagree in terms of case law and whether we're consenting or disclosing, and so that was impetus for the term. But if we want to take consent out and just have full disclosure, assigned disclosure, I'm very open to that. The idea, members, is to put up some hurdles for the bad players that they'd at least have to be out there making the people they're dealing with aware that they're doing this practice. So why don't we hear from some testifiers on what's going on, and I'll be very open to fine-tuning the language.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and bring them up, and then if you could, as you come up, just please give us your name and who you represent, what organization you're representing, or yourself, or whichever, so that we know who you are. So, Senator Barr, if you want to go ahead and call them forward.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, we have Steve Anderson and Aaron McMahon.
And welcome to the committee. Is this your first time before a legislative committee?
It is.
Oh, all right. We're good folks, and so are you. So we'll love to hear what you have to say. So please introduce yourself.
Good morning. I'm Steve Anderson. I'm an owner of Senior Management. We manage properties, rental properties, homeowner associations, commercial properties. What we're looking at here is sort of representing the best interest of the associations, and by and large, boards of directors have varying degrees of sophistication. You've got some boards that are fairly sophisticated, and you've got some boards that are not. I think what we're trying to do here is at least alert people, boards, that there are things that are occurring that affect them and their ability to run the association. So that if you're engaging in these kinds of kickbacks or under the table payments, there's a couple of things that happen. One, the property management company may have sort of a conflict of interest. In other words, am I representing the association or am I representing my company? I mean, we always put the homeowner association first, obviously. They're the client. They pay our fees. They pay our monthly fees. The second thing that happens when I don't do this, I don't compete, I don't have a construction company, because I don't want to compete with the very contractors I need in order to run my business. If contractors know that somehow I will charge a fee if they get involved, or if there's an insurance claim and I'm going to take some of this insurance claim proceeds, that's going to limit the number of vendors that I can deal with. People are going to say, I don't want to go to Anderson because I know in the end he's going to get the job. Or if I go to Anderson, I'm going to have to pay some sort of fee. I'm not involved with those things. I don't do that. So, you know, what other companies do, frankly, I'm not aware of those things. I just know generally I think those things are going on from what I hear. The other thing I know with insurance claims, we've got an adjuster here. Insurance claims are very lucrative for contractors. Typically, the amounts, the scope, the replacement cost that the insurance companies allow is more than you'd get if you were bidding the job out. So the margins on insurance work are very large. And it's a situation where contractors make a fair amount of money on those. And I think what happens there with that amount of money is available, you've got management companies who want to somehow participate in those excess funds. I'm not sure how you police that. That's something that I think the insurance industry has to look at. But I think in terms of this legislation, the only thing I want to make sure is that boards have disclosure. I don't think necessarily we talked about consent. That may or may not be necessary, but I want boards to be able to ask the right questions and say, what is the relationship? How much are you getting out of this deal? And be able to make their own judgments as to whether or not they want to proceed with either the management company and their contractor or an individual contractor separate from the management company. So that just kind of gives you an overview, at least my sense. And again, just having boards, because boards ask me and they suspect that I take kickbacks. I mean, I get the question from boards, how much did you get on the deal? So I'm aware boards know this is going on, but I don't think they know the scope or who's involved or what the consequences are.
Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson.
I'm Erin McMahon. I'm actually the Director of Client Services for Cedar Management, and I have the pleasure of working with, in my role at Cedar, as that my job function allows me to work with many boards. And I just wanted to reiterate everything that Steve said and the fact that these boards are volunteers who are elected by their communities. And sometimes it's even difficult to get volunteers to come forward and serve on the board. And you're expecting the boards of directors to understand financials, contracts, state statutes, maintenance issues. It's a lot for a volunteer homeowner to put their brains around. So to understand all the language in a contract that's when they sign on with a management company, I just don't know if you can expect that.
Any questions for these two folks, Mr. Chair, members?
Thank you, Ms. McMahon. Any questions? Okay, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for either one of you. In life, there's consent and there's consent, okay? You go buy a product, regardless of what it might be, and I shove in front of you a document that says a number of things, and it's a fairly routine transaction, and nobody takes them seriously because lawyers are not to be taken seriously anymore. And I can say that because I am one. I didn't mean to be, my mom made me. Anyway, so that's a joke. She actually did. Anyway, the point is, getting to Senator Jungbauer's point, do we want this to be something that can just be shoved into a bunch of documents that they sign off on and don't really read? Because that would theoretically be notice, but it really isn't consent. Or do we want it to be something where if I'm going to go hire my brother-in-law to do this project, I have to put a document in front of the association that says, we're getting this, we're having the house the townhouse re-roofed, and my brother-in-law is going to do it. And I want you all to sign here. What are we looking for?
Yeah. I think what you're looking at, if I'm a board member in an association, I want to know who the contractor is. I do want to know if there's a potential issue of conflict. I think we try and be as transparent as possible. I don't want somebody coming back and saying, geez, why didn't you tell us? So I try and anticipate what are the questions the boards might have. What do they need to know? And frankly, I think disclosure is disclosing any relationship between a contractor and a management company. And if there's no common ownership or there's anything that could look like to be a potential conflict, I think we're fine. But it's a question that a reasonable person would ask: is there a conflict of interest? Am I serving two masters here?
Mr. Chair, follow up if I could, please.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. See, it seems to me that that's the kind that's going to be meaningful. And Senator Jungbauer, I really want to hear from you what your intent was, because I think there's disclosure and there's disclosure. And that's really what we're getting at here. And the way I'd look at it, being a lawyer, if someone came to me with this statute and said, Dave, what do I need to do to comply? To be safe, I would tell that person, I'd be interested to hear from any other lawyers in the room, I would tell that person, you really need to disclose a little bit of the details of this transaction and have a person sign something. Because that to me, Senator Jungbauer and guests, that's what, you know, consented to in writing means to me. Now, if that same client came to me and said, Dave, I got an association that's really angry with me here because they don't think I fully disclosed, but I did have it tucked in this thing here, could I defend that as disclosure, try to make the arguments? Yes. So as a litigator defending a client, you can make the argument that handing someone the long piece of paper with the line in there, that's disclosure. But if I'm advising a client on the front end, I say, for purposes of this statute, be on the safe side. So I think I really need to know, what you want to get to in terms of, and then the question becomes, how do we micromanage that? To Senator Scheid's point of, well, what does disclosure mean? My brother-in-law Bob Smith is doing this, and the normal market price is would be $21,700, but he's going to do it for 10% less, so about $2,200. I'm trying to figure out how this works in practice. But the first question you have to get to is, do you want real, true disclosure, or are you just looking for a line in a document that gets signed so that there's at least plausible disclosure? That's what it seems to me. And I apologize for the monologue, but I think we need to understand that, or we don't know what the statute is trying to accomplish.
Senator Jungbauer, any response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want real, true disclosure.
Okay.
And I guess that's why we use the term consent. And I think if you look up case law in terms of some of the dual agencies and things like that, that you'll find that some of those specifics are looked at as a consent to in writing. So that's why we use the terms, although I have an attorney that'll be coming up to testify that can talk to how we get to that. And to Senator Thompson's point, if your brother-in-law is doing it, he's doing it for 10% less. I don't have a problem with that if it meets the fiduciary responsibility. It's when you're taking that 10% and putting it in your pocket, the association then doesn't gain anything by brother-in-law Leroy doing it. They pay the full price, and your brother-in-law got the job, and you kept the difference. So that's when it becomes a potential issue. And it is interesting to note, too, that I had five different contractors that worked with me to write this, and none of them were allowed by their companies to come in and testify for fear of retribution. So It's an issue out there that they don't want targets on their back for showing up on this bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I want to ask Senator Jungbauer, is it your intent to disallow this kind of an arrangement, where there's a fee or kickback, or is it just to disclose the fact that you're receiving a fee? You know, to me, that's real important here, because and it is also problematic to use the word consented to, because there is definitely a difference between you disclosing to me that you're going to get a fee, and if I sign that I received the disclosure. I mean, arguably, I'm consenting to your doing it if I've read it and understand exactly what it means. But is it your idea that somebody could do this legitimately as long as they tell you about it? Is that your idea? I'm confused a little bit about what you're trying to do here, because if you look at the title of Subdivision 2, it says Prohibition of Ownership of Certain Firms. Well, this bill doesn't prohibit the ownership of any kind of a firm. It tries to regulate the conduct of a person who may have an interest in a firm, but it doesn't prohibit them from owning. So that there's some confusing direction, I think, in the language of the bill.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, that's actually a good point. Originally, the language, excuse me, I'm having the same issue.
No, I'm sorry, you caught mine.
The language that was brought to me actually did have statements of prohibition, so this should have been probably retitled. Because I told the group that brought me the language that I don't think it's legal to prohibit anyone from owning anything, just that we would have to have the proper disclosure and consent, if you will. So we did change the language in there without changing the title. The secondary thing is, again, I don't think we want to outlaw somebody from taking some sort of a kickback or a percentage, because there's cases in which perhaps a property management company might find a great subcontractor, and for going out of their way to find that subcontractor and then literally looking over the job to make sure the job's right, you could call it a construction administrative fee or something else, they maybe deserve that 10% or whatever they might get off the contract. But there again, if you allow the association to know that relationship exists, and you can argue that you're earning that kickback, like realtors again do by finding the right title company or finding the right mortgage company to help folks along the way without having to have the folks go out and search these things out themselves. They're making the argument, and again with a disclosure form, that they're creating a value with that service. So I want to allow that argument to be made, but again, under the auspices of disclosing it to who the person you already have a fiduciary responsibility with. And again, those are why these forms were created. for realtors, and what a buyer in that case, or in this case a townhouse association, has a different idea of what that form means, and some people do gloss over it. And many good, again, having the real estate and construction background, many good firms go over in great detail exactly what these disclosures mean and what the ramifications of the disclosures are. And then, you know, new folks or fly-by-night folks don't tend to go over them. They gloss over them and they put them in a stack of other things and just say, well, this is what I'm doing and you need to sign here to let people know that you know. And blah, 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 blah. We call that professional mumbling. And there was a course on that, Senator Thompson, that I took, professional mumbling. So, so yes, things go on. I think there's a problem, and I think parties need to know what's going on, but I want to allow for people to make the argument that they've earned a portion of that fee. And so if you sit down with your association and you go over it with a disclosure, however you want to call it, and say, I'm taking this much money, I believe I've earned it because I've got a great value, and I'm going to be looking over this more than, you know, as a property manager, I've got the background to look over the roofing, the siding, and be able to tell if our subcontractors are doing a great job. If you can argue that, I want to leave that open for people to argue that they've earned that portion, and as long as somebody knows that they're getting that money.
Senator Jungbauer? We've gotten a lot of requests passed to us, or not requests, suggestions on amendments and modifications as we go through this discussion. It's enlightening a lot of folks. But I want to make sure here that we're getting at the intent of this, and then maybe we'll have some language proposed to you to get at what folks are doing. So the way I'm seeing this is that current law is nothing.
Correct.
Then there's really three higher levels of intervention here. Number one being simply a disclosure of an ownership interest, just the disclosure, whatever mechanism that's done, but just a disclosure. The next one would be requiring consent, and then the highest would be an outright prohibition. Is that a correct assessment of sort of the hierarchy of choices?
Mr. Chair, actually, not really. The last hierarchy of choices that we've had the discussion on, you and I, is actually licensure, which they do in many states as they license property managers, and then they fall under all the same requirements as builders and realtors and other things. So I would argue that the highest form is licensure, where you're actually have under threat of losing your license to be a property manager by engaging in these kind of situations that are under the same auspices of realtors and builders.
Okay, so Senator Jungbauer, actually, we would put licensure below prohibition, because if you prohibit,
okay,
you can't grant a license for it. So, but I think this bill here doesn't discuss licensure of any sort, and there's no way we're going to get into anything like that today. So
no.
I don't think licensure is any sort of a viable option for us today. So based on that disclosure, consent, prohibition hierarchy, the bill, I would say, does the consent level. Is that correct? I mean, you have
correct,
some prohibited
Mr. Chair.
Practices, but it says unless consented to in writing. So you are really trying to get at the consent is the threshold. Am I interpreting that right, Senator Jungbauer?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So is that your intent? And is there a piece of this that disclosure is adequate, or is there a piece that you want an outright prohibition? What would be your intent, or is your intent the consent?
Mr. Chair and members, my intent would really be a form of disclosure / consent that puts folks on notice that are doing this. So to the extent we can get something in the law that says, and Senator Thompson kind of broached that subject of at least getting these people to go to their attorney and say, wait a minute, am I doing something that might be illegal here? If we can get people to start thinking about what they're doing and whether or not they might be doing something potentially illegal, that's what I think, in my belief, is, you know, government has no more than to put people on consent and try to protect consumers in a minor way without going to prohibiting everything. If we could prohibit stupidity, we'd be well on our way to figuring out all the problems and ills of life.
Okay.
But we can't do
that. I'm sorry, John Barr, let's do this. While we cogitate on what we just discussed, let's get some more information in the mix, and maybe
great,
we can hear from some of your additional testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The next testifiers will be Jill McMahon and Cheryl. Jeez, I'm not even. Svenson. Big, yeah, I should practice those in advance, right? So which one of these? Okay. Jill, you can go first. Introduce yourself and your job's done.
Good morning. My name is Jill McMahon. I'm actually here as an association manager, which I have done for nearly 11 years.
Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. It's a little unnerving, I have to say. I was asked to testify just about some of, you know, my direct involvement, and I can just say my mind is kind of jumping all over. As a property manager or association manager, our role is to act as a liaison between, you know, the management company, the board, and the homeowners, and to act as on their best interest. And I think a good example I can say is that I've never received what per se is called a kickback, but it's a small world in our industry, and there's a lot of discussions about people profiting off of others' loss, which I think is my issue. I once handled an insurance claim that was well over $1 million, and I understand in the business that some managers will expect from the contractor or the vendors a 2% of that. I really have a hard time telling somebody if they've just lost their home that I just made, you know, 10% or 2% off of their claim for just contacting and coordinating and calling people. I'm asked often if I get kickbacks, but my role is to really just find a good contractor, which can also be difficult, somebody that's going to be honest and really do a good job. And that's pretty much where I'm coming from this morning as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Cheryl Svenningson. I am also a property manager. The interest that I have in this proposal, my concern with having a property management company participating, especially in an insurance claim, is that you aren't going to get the expected end result for those homeowners. I've been a property manager for 4 years. Prior to that, I was in the insurance industry for 21. And as a property manager, I've had 4 hail claims that I had to deal with in the first couple of years when I was in the property management industry. And it's very difficult, I think, when you have management companies, one that I used to work for, where they say you have to use our construction company and we're going to take the 10% profit and loss that is built into that insurance scope. With the insurance scope, it lays out, you know, this house gets X amount of square feet of shingles, it gets this amount of linear feet of gutters. It's very detailed. And really, there isn't a lot of cushion in there. So when you have the management company taking the contractor's overhead and profit, there have to be some cut somewhere. And maybe if the contractor has to make it up by using a 10-year warranty shingle instead of a 15-year warranty shingle. That was my concern.
Thank you. Senator Vanderveer.
Question though, isn't coordinating and contracting, or contacting and coordinating, isn't that what property managers do? Isn't that their business? And if you do have, hate to seem like Grinch here, but if you do have a situation where they have a lot more work to do because of a storm or some type of disaster, fire, extra cleanup. And the property manager is who the association wants to do the coordinating and contacting, shouldn't there be some compensation for that?
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Vanderveer, and if there should be some extra compensation, it should normally be negotiated between the association and the property manager. It shouldn't be negotiated under the table outside the auspices of where that fiduciary responsibility exists.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, I don't disagree. In fact, I'm one of those working on a suggested amendment because I think you raise very serious issues, and a resolution may not be exactly as written in the bill, but something should be done. But I don't think we should fail to realize the service that the property managers do provide a service, and that includes, it's extra work for them to deal with these types of situations is my only point.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Vandeveer, I would also go so far as to say when you contract as a property manager, you create a contract to do X amount of services. If that falls outside of the scope of those services, otherwise, you know, 1 year you get by with no damage, and then 1 year you have storm damage. That's just the way life works. It's no different than the guys that are plowing the snow and doing the salt on the roads. If I can't help it, if you didn't budget the right amount, but 1 year you're going to have snow, and maybe the next year you don't. You don't go out and just say, yay, we're going to celebrate it all and blow the money 1 year because we didn't have any snow, and the next year snow plowers do the same thing. They bid a job based on X on a lot of times, and, you know, other than extreme things. And if you have built into your contract in the event of an extreme storm event that causes damage, that you get X amount of dollars more, you come back and negotiate it. Otherwise, a typical contract, you have good years and you have bad years. Some years you make money, some years you don't. I think that's called business.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Youngbauer, I'm thinking more of like the Hugo tornadoes and situations like that, where I don't believe that property managers, and I'm not a property manager, and I, you know, just bring up the fact that we're acting like if they made money, they were bad people, and I think that's not the point of your bill. I think it's yours is disclosure of financial arrangements they may have with vendors, so which is two different things.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Vandeveer, that's really the point of my bill is honest property managers, when they hear about, as they say, that's a small world out there, when they hear about other people making huge amounts of money by doing some of this stuff under the table, it's well, sometimes it can make you think, geez, maybe I should be doing that so that I can live a little better like the rest of those, or maybe we should do something about the rest of those, at least get it disclosed.
Okay, Senator Jungbauer, I'm going to offer up a suggestion to you that you can think about,
right,
not as an amendment here, but just to think about while then we hear from your next testifiers, if I could. I outlined for you a moment ago about the hierarchy, about status quo nothing, then disclosure, consent, and prohibition. Also, you've got two elements of your bill, Subdivision 2, which deals with the work being done, and Subdivision 3, which is the prohibited practices. So it seems to me that consenting to in writing for kickbacks just seems very odd. We've had some discussion about that. That maybe, as a suggestion here, that on that Subdivision 3, that you just make that piece the outright prohibition, and then just delete the first sentence there up to that first comma. So on lines 1.21, you would delete unless consented to in writing by the owner or owners, comma, delete that, and then start that sentence with no property manager or property management company, et cetera, and they'd be prohibited from those kickbacks. That would actually raise the level of involvement on Subdivision 3 by just making an outright prohibition. But then, once those are prohibited, Subdivision 2, of course, becomes much less important. You could either get rid of it, or you could just simply do disclosure, or you could keep it at your consent level. But since those practices are prohibited, why do people care if somebody has an ownership of something, because they can't do those, unless there could be some hidden things, so maybe you still want a level of disclosure. I don't know if you want consent, but disclosure's never bad. So think about that concept, and then let's hear from your next testifiers, and then we'll revisit it when we've heard the other testimony. We also have an opponent to the bill who is here, who's listening diligently to everything we're saying, and I'm sure we'll have some comments for us as well. So with that, maybe you could bring your next testifiers up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
All right, Paul Norcia and Chris Parrington. And these members, these folks are really people that have much more inside information into what we're getting at here. And so I'll have them explain especially Paul, what he does and his interests there. So, Paul, if you can
My name is Paul Norsha. I'm a public insurance adjuster licensed here in the state of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
Certainly appreciate your opportunity to speak in front of you today. I think it's important to realize that, first of all, the state already prohibits some practices for individuals. I myself, as a public adjuster, cannot have any direct or indirect interest in a construction company. And I think the conflict of interest is perfectly clear in why I can't. To me, the same should hold true for a management company that is basically overseeing an insurance claim as I would. I've seen it happen since 1998. These management companies are taking proceeds, and I would say the on the order of millions and millions of dollars over the course of the last 12 years that have gone out of the coffers of these associations and into their pockets, all based on insurance claims. But it's not just insurance claims. It's capital improvements, too, where they steer and they control the bid process. It needs to stop.
Chris? Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Chris Parrington. I am an attorney with the Schildbartle Law Firm. A significant portion of my practice is representing homeowners associations in insurance claim disputes. And I think that there's a couple of things that the committee needs to be aware of. And I think really there's two practices that I've observed and I'm aware of that I think this bill is designed to prevent. And I think that a little more description will help the committee fully understand what's going on. The first is what the industry refers to as paper general contractors. And that is a practice in which management companies go out, get a contractor's license, set up maybe one desk within their management office that is manned by somebody on a part-time basis. And what happens is, and most of this comes in terms of insurance claims, so what happens is a property gets hit with a hailstorm, and the management company sends out its paper GC to go ahead and take a look at the property, and then to go to the association, and the management goes to the association and says, I want you to use, you know, let's say it's Chris Parrington Management. I want you to use CPP Construction. I think that they're a good company for you to use. Go ahead and use them. Most of the boards, not being sophisticated in this area, say, you're our management company. You're our fiduciary. We trust you. They sign off on it and say, no problem. Then what happens is the management company or the GC, the paper GC, doesn't do any of the work. They go out and bid the work to somebody else, usually another general contractor or a sub. And instead of doing what they should as a fiduciary, which is look for the most reputable general contractor, they find the lowest bidder. So, for example, if you have a $1 million claim, the CPP Construction would be getting the general contract on it for $1 million. That's what the insurance company would pay out. They then would end up getting a subcontractor to do it for about $500,000, $600,000, and they're capturing that profit of $400,000 for themselves without any disclosure, any consent by the board. The other practice, and I think that that is, as I read the proposed bill, I think that that is what Subdivision 2 is designed to try to prevent. The other practice that I think needs to be prohibited and is addressed in this is the pay-to-play practice, and that is really as it probably the sounds, which is, contractors or management companies go out and solicit contractors to perform work for their properties, not based upon their reputation, not based upon the quality of their work, but based upon who is willing to pay the most to the management company for the work. The end result is, of course, you've got subpar work, you've got contractors that aren't reputable, you've got management companies making money, and sometimes there are deductibles that are at issue, so the board is assessing the owners to cover the deductible while the management company is taking a profit. And the contracts I've seen and the issues I've seen come up in my arbitrations and litigation is a 10% kickback. So these management companies on a $1 million claim are getting $100,000. Now, Senator Vandeweyer brought up an issue about, well, what about the contractors that do good work and that actually did something? And I don't think that there's any problem with letting them continue to lead a bill on an hourly basis for the work they perform. But I have not seen a situation on a $1 million claim where a management company has done anything other than show up to board meetings and take notes, and yet they're getting $100,000 kickback on that. One other thing, my hope, what I'd like to see as a litigator here, and obviously Senator Thompson could probably has touched on this a little bit, I think a full prohibition of this entire practice, no ability for consent, no ability for disclosure is the proper thing to do. Because if you start to allow consent, you start to allow disclosure, you get into what Senator Thompson addressed, which is, do you have disclosure or do you have disclosure? And you're going to have attorneys such as myself, attorneys throughout the state of Minnesota arguing ambiguities, and you're going to be involved in litigation over what was a disclosure, what was a consent. And so what I ultimately would like to see, and I think is the best thing for this bill to do, is just prohibit everything. Prohibit the paper general contractors. Prohibit the pay-to-play practice. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair and members, just for full disclosure on Chris's testimony there, he did tell me before that he was an odd attorney and that most attorneys would come in here and argue for ambiguity so that they could make more money, and he would just as soon do something different than argue ambiguity on this particular practice.
All right, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Parrington, I heard the term, I don't remember where, fiduciary thrown about before, but I assume you're using that as a term of art. There is truly in law a fiduciary duty between a management company and the board?
I think an argument can be made. Here's the reason I think that a bill like this is a good idea, is there are some general fiduciary relationships that exist between people of power and people that don't have the power. I think that if I was in a position that I had to argue that without a bill like this in place, I could, but I could see defense counsel also saying that, no, there really isn't a fiduciary relationship unless it's created by statute. I think this creates, a statute such as this would create that fiduciary relationship.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, Senator Jungbauer, then that concludes your portion of presenting the bill. So you did exceed your 28 seconds.
Yes.
But that's okay. You did warn us about that. That's all right. We had lots of questions, and we'll have a few more. Then what I think, well, first let me ask this. Is there anybody else that wants to speak in favor of the bill? Okay. Oh, we have somebody in the back. Then let's take care of that first here then. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
And ma'am, if you could please state your name and whom you represent for the record. And good morning.
Good morning. My name is Cheryl Franson, and I'm a homeowner. I'm an ex-board member, and I guess I'd prefer to not say what neighborhood, because we did go through a rather nasty lawsuit. And I guess one of the things that I'd like to just start by saying, it was probably about 5 or 6 years ago, one of the worst days in our neighborhood was one of the best days for our management company. It was really hard for us to look at our neighborhood. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You take your time.
Okay. This is rather intimidating, I must admit.
Senator Jungbauer is not nearly as scary as he looks.
I know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate that. I'd not sit next to this man.
Is there a disclosure on that? Yes.
Anyway, what we ended up finding out is after going through over a year of trying to find out if there was an insurance settlement, we found out many things about a company that we really thought was doing the best job for us. They weren't. They were definitely looking out for, I heard one of the people say, there was $1 million in their pocket, and we wanted our roofs fixed. We ended up having to go to court, and because they had assumed they were going to take care of fixing everything. We did not know that they were going to do that. That was never brought up. It was never part of our management. Our management contract for roughly $20,000 a year took care of the things that we expected that they would take care of. When it came time, and it is in our property manager's job description, incidentally, that the property manager will administer insurance claims, filing claims, and working with homeowners on individual claims or with the board of directors on other claims that may affect the common areas of the property. So, of course, we assumed what he was doing was of no cost, or a part of the normal, which one of the people has said some year, I think it was even you, some years you have no snow, some years you do. You have a lot of snow, and this is what we assumed was going to be happening. He was taking care of our neighborhood. We found out almost 9 months later, after going through an extremely large scope and sequence bill, or they had one of their subcontractors come out, and we said we'd like to have at least three different bids. And our property manager very clearly said, oh, no, you don't want three different bids. You only want one. You certainly don't want to have three bids to go into your insurance company with and have them say, well, why would you take this high one when you want the slow one? We're going to go in with only one bid. Oh, okay. We were a volunteer board of five people who had full-time jobs, and how do you fight someone who knows what they're doing? But the ladies over there said, you trust them. So that's what they did. We found out later that their company, which we did not know was their company, that was a different name, came in with a bid that was over $1.5 million more than what a public adjusters came in and said. That's probably part of the reason that we ended up having to go to public adjusters, because we did not have our insurance company's backing at that point. If we'd had a normal bid, that would have been what they assumed, they would have probably settled. So we ended up having to wait for a year to get our roofs fixed. Then only to find out when we said to our management company, well, now that we've got the money from the public adjusters, now what are we going to do? How do we go about figuring out who's going to fix our roofs? We were then told, well, you already have one. It's us. We had no clue. We fought that and actually won in court. But one of the comments in court that our lawyer had gotten the owner of the company to actually say was, why is it you're suing them for several hundred thousand dollars? And he said, well, that's what we would have gotten back from the companies that we would have subcontracted to, because that would have, he didn't use the word kickback. Our lawyer did say, oh, so kind of like a kickback. No, it was just money that was due to us. And not money that they had earned for doing anything, so that extra $1.5 million that they had put in the claim for is what they were expecting that they would be getting. Would have taken a lot of years of our $20,000 plus to make that money. We sat and we told them before this even happened, we really want to have you work on our claim, or excuse me, we want you to work on our neighborhood association work. We would like to go to somebody who's a specialist in fixing over 100 homes. That night I got a very nicely written email saying, okay, we understand that. Good luck. Terrific. The next morning I got one that said, on second thought, no, we are going to do your claim. And within a week, the truck started rolling in from their company, dropping off shingles. We had to have the police come and actually remove them from the property. Questions?
Community members, any questions? Okay. Ms. Franklin, thank you very much for coming. It's important for us to hear from folks like yourself, as well as all of the paid professionals and that come in here all the time, and we had it with a lot of the testimony. So thank you much. Okay. Senator Drinkbauer, let's move to opponents. If we could hear from Patrick Hines.
Are you an opponent now?
It's on my list as that way. We'll find out, I guess. So, Mr. Hines, welcome to the committee.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Yeah. My name is Patrick Hines. I'm the chair of the Legislative Action Committee of the Community Association Institute, and our organization represents homeowner associations. We have members who are property managers, members who are homeowners, and who serve on their board of directors. So, in one sense, we don't take sides on an issue like this. Our goal is to educate all of our members so that properties are managed in the best way possible. So our organization is not opposed to the bill in its entirety. Our primary concern was with a piece of language defining what constituted an owner. I spoke with Senator Jungbauer before the committee meeting, and he had graciously had Senate counsel drafted as an amendment. It's the A1 amendment. And our concern was, as drafted, owner is listed as any person who has a legal interest in the property. And so for a condominium association, it would be every member of the association. And whether you do disclosure or consent, I read the language as requiring each and every member to provide written disclosure. And that's certainly unwieldy, and I don't think it was the intention. listening to the previous testimony, most of the testifiers discussed disclosure to the board. So we had proposed language that would simply make clear that whether it's disclosure or consent or whatever the board, the committee decides, that's going to the board of directors as the authorized person who administers the association.
Okay.
So that was all the testimony that we had. If you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hines. We may be able to accommodate you there. Is there any questions for Mr. Hines? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Senator Jungbauer, is this an appropriate time then, based on the testimony? Did you want to talk about the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. The A1 amendment was drawn in order to satisfy that and would fit under page 1, line 14, under the definition of owner. After the period, insert the owner of a common interest community as defined in Chapter 515B means the unit's owner association organized under that section. So that members, we would not have to have consent from each and every owner of a potentially huge complexes like that.
Okay. So you're offering that as an author's amendment?
So, yes, Mr. Chair and members, I'm offering the A1 at this point as an author's amendment.
Okay, so Senator Jungbauer has offered the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. This is the first committee this bill has been in, so all those in favor of
Mr. Chairman?
That, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes.
I'm sorry, before you vote. I mean, this takes us in a certain direction that we are then going to talk about disclosure and consent rather than prohibition. I don't know that you need, unless you're asking, allowing consent, I don't know that you need it, but if we're just an outright prohibition, I don't know that you need to define it, but.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, I believe that I will be looking at disclosure and prohibition. I personally at this point, unless committee members can convince me otherwise, I think I want subdivision 2 to remain in the bill, and we can talk about how it remains in the bill and then look at subdivision 3 as a prohibited practice as recommended. So I think this still.
Senator Scheid, does that make sense to you?
Well, Mr. Chairman, then nothing's changing. I mean, go ahead, and if you do the amendment, that's fine. I guess we can, if we change the bill, we can take it out later. But I mean, I agree with putting this language in if you're going to keep the bill going forward with this ability to consent to having somebody take a kickback. And I, you know.
Senator Scheid, I don't know. We're just adding this is.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there may be more than one amendment. This is just a definitional one.
I think. That's what I'm saying. This is just in the definition section.
Courtesy.
Let's do that. It's the author's amendment, and let's just put it on there so we have the bill before us in the shape that he wants to, and then we can go ahead and take it from there and make changes. If we change something, we can move it around. So with that, members, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? And the A1 amendment is adopted, so that is now part of the bill in the definition section. With that, we have some more testimony, it looks like, behind you. So if you could please identify yourself and let us know, are you speaking on behalf or in favor of or in opposition to the bill?
It might be neither. I'm not exactly sure, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, Todd Liljenquist, representing the Multi-Housing Association. Property owners, managers of rental housing, we also do have common interest community members. I'm not here to speak on behalf of those members, however. We have no position on this bill as drafted. But just a note of caution in the discussion on the prohibition, Section 3 and Section 2 both speak to property management and property management companies very generally. And as far as apartment property managers, those managers are completely situated differently than in the association context. All of the discussion today has been directed at association management. If you're a property management company and you have a relationship with a construction company or ownership in a construction company, the owners are fully aware of that. And they already know that. In fact, oftentimes in those types of situations, they serve as the property management company, the developer also, and the owner. So oftentimes they're all three. So an outright prohibition, at least for all property management practices, is a concern for us. If it's simply applied to the association context, I think it perhaps puts it in a different context, but applying to all property management situations and arrangements, I think, is an area that's troublesome.
Okay, Mr. Lindquist, so I understand the difference between the associations and the apartment building managers. But on prohibited practices, section subdivision 3, which we've been informally referring to as the kickback section,
yes.
Are you saying
to induce business?
I don't know.
I'll wait till they're done.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, well, I'm sorry. We're kind of discussing this because I was thinking about that in terms of property managers of certain types of commercial properties and apartment complexes and things. They are typically a arm of a construction company because they're required to fix the toilets and the furnaces, and those are part of that property management contract. What I was trying to discuss here was I don't believe that any of the four items we've listed would relate to those types of things, because you're contracting for those specific services up front and what types of services you will be performing under that property management contract. But we can and want to make sure that we're not
right
arbitrarily bringing you into that.
And Mr. Chair and members, I wasn't prepared to speak on this today. So to be frank, of those four, I don't know whether or not any of those would fall into this context. It's just a note of caution that that I wanted to bring before the committee.
I think what we can
just one moment. Because I started to ask the question is why would you – I know there's a difference between the associations and apartment building managers, property management companies, but why would it be okay for anybody to get these items and these prohibited practices, these kickbacks, as we've been calling them, why would it be okay for anybody to get those?
Well, I wasn't prepared to speak on this, so I don't know exactly what the fee relationships between some of the management companies and perhaps their construction arm. Of course, in the rental housing context, the owners are not paying an additional assessment or anything like that like they would in the common interest community associations. It's included in your rent. And so if the rent increases are too much, then that drives the renters out of the market. There's no the only impact would be on the owners, which in this situation, as far as I'm aware, every owner is going to be aware of any relationship, any associated relationship between the management arm and the construction arm.
Okay. All right. Senator Jungbauer, what did you want?
Again, Mr. Chair, members, I don't believe, like you said, you reiterated very well, Mr. Chair, that these aren't practices that should be legal anyway. If there is some kickback under that sort of a situation, and the only time I would see it potentially arising is if there was an insurance settlement that property manager was in bidding on to try to take care of the insurance settlement on that building as well, and then indeed we wouldn't want them taking some kind of a kickback in terms of that. But I would say that and I don't know if this bill would go any other committee or straight. Okay, so if there would be something
going to judiciary, because
my favorite committee where all good bills die. That's the reason I got on that committee, so I could help some live through see the light of day. But you'd have my word that if you could figure out something that we were missing, we would take care of it at the next stop for sure.
Okay, so Senator, so as of right now, everybody is part of this bill.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, then, thank you, Mr. Lindquist. And what we should probably do right now is ask, is there any other testimony either for or against the bill? Okay, seeing none, the committee members have any questions right now, and then we're going to, any immediate questions? And then seeing none, so Senator Jungbauer, I had proposed to you a thought or a concept about the prohibited practices and not having consent for prohibited practices, just outright prohibiting it. What is your thought on that?
Mr. Chair, members, let me take subdivision 2 and subdivision 3 together, kind of. But subdivision 2, I don't believe we need consent if we work on prohibited practices in subdivision 3. So, but I would still like a simple disclosure, something that just is in the course of events, you're disclosing that as a property manager, you do have a relationship with a construction company, and it may or may not come into play with anything that goes on there. And then as you work through that, then in subdivision 3, I like your example of making it. I would accept that wholly as making those four items prohibited practices.
Okay. Because I won't offer it unless you're comfortable with it. I don't want to do damage to your concept of your bill. Why don't we take these two pieces? The first one I could offer up, and the second one, Mr. Stang has some language for various. He has different, suggestions from different committee members, and he has pulled some things together that he has to handle these various contingencies. So let's just take this then. I would move that on lines 1.21, that strike the language after the period for the remainder of the line. And then on lines 1.22, strike owners, comma, and then capitalize the N on no. So the subdivision would read, subdivision 3 prohibited practices, no property manager or property management company, et cetera, et cetera. So that would be my amendment, members, if you follow that. And then
they can't consent to it.
Senator Jungbauer, do you have any comment on that? And then we'll see if there's any discussion.
I like that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Committee members, any discussion on that amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, just that I strongly support doing that.
Yes. Okay.
I like that. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. All right, then. Members, all in favor of the Gerlach amendment as read, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Yeah. Those opposed? And the amendment prevails. And now let's go up to subdivision 2, Senator Jungbauer. And Mr. Stang has some language to get at what you want. Mr. Stang.
Mr. Chair, this is one suggestion. First, to take care of Senator Scheid's concern on the head note of subdivision 2 being misleading, I would suggest deleting prohibition of ownership of and insert disclosure of interest of property management company in. So that would, I believe, take care of the misleading head note.
Disclosure of?
Interest of property management company in.
Maybe what we should do is we should just take that as a piece and we should have Senator Scheid offer that up.
I will.
Maybe just as that, let's take these one piece at a time. Mm-hmm. So our members clear on that was offered, or the amendment? Okay. And Senator Jungbauer, do you have any comments on that particular amendment as offered by Senator Scheid?
No, Mr. Chair. And Senator Scheid actually had in my notes that we needed to retitle that.
Okay.
So, like that.
Any discussion to the Scheid amendment? Seeing none, then all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. So that on line 1.15 is taken care of. And Mr. Stang?
Mr. Chairman, now to turn this from a consent to a disclosure requirement, I would suggest on line 1.18, at the end of the line after unless, insert the interest has been. On line 1.19, delete consented to and insert disclosed, and delete by and insert to. And then after owners, I'm wondering if the committee may want to think about some time period before the work commences where this has to be done, rather than, you know, it could be done contemporaneously with that might be considered as well. So, and that could be 10 days, 20 days, 5 days, I don't know, but the suggestion there would be at least blank days prior to commencement of the work.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest?
Could Mr. Stang read the sentence then as he proposes that it be changed to, rather than just strike this and put this in?
Before you do that, Mr. Stang, Senator Jungbauer, would you have an idea on the time frame, if you'd like to go with the time frame at all first, and then if so, can you give us a number?
Mr. Chair and members, I am thinking 10 days prior to the acceptance of a contract, not prior to beginning of work, because I think it needs to be disclosed prior to somebody looking at the contracts and accepting a contract.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kozelka.
Senator Jungbauer, I just have a question about if you have an insurance claim and if they want to get going on it right away because the roof's wide open or whatever, would that slow down that process too much?
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka. I don't know that, but I'm doubtful because I know in the insurance world, if a roof is open, for example, insurance companies pre-authorize companies to go out there and put tarps or other things over the roof in order to keep further damage from occurring. That's a separate part of the actual insurance settlement, so I don't believe that would affect that. But if you have an idea, Senator Gazelka, of shortening it, but I do want to disclose a number of days prior to that contract, but leave enough time for people to look and compare the contracts of others with that to make sure everybody's getting a fair shake.
Mr. Chair, I'm just thinking before, whether it's 2 days or whatever, I just want to make sure we can get to it right away, but before.
So Senator, because like you're thinking 10 days is too long?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, how about 5 days?
Better?
Sure.
Okay. All right.
Looking around.
A gentleman's raising, Mr. Hines, would like to comment on the time frame.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Patrick Hines from the Community Association Institute. The concern I would have with the time frame is that while all of today's discussion has been in the context of large construction projects and insurance claims, I think the language would apply to any work on the property, which could include repairing damaged drywall in a common area hallway that someone banged with while moving furniture, or touch-up painting, or any number of small projects that are ongoing. And I'm concerned that putting that time frame in would trigger some sort of continual need to notify in advance of each job performed, which, again, I don't think is the intention, but I would be concerned that that would be the result.
Mr. Hines, it would be true that if you hired an unrelated party, or you have no ownership interest in it, wouldn't delay anything, right? This only applies if you have an ownership interest in the company that's doing the work. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's correct, and I know it's fairly common in the industry for a management company, ABC Management, to have ABC Construction or ABC Maintenance, and so all of these little things that come up over time are routinely done by the ABC Maintenance, and I don't know that this would require written consent every time a small project was
okay.
done.
Senator Jungbauer, do you have comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, when it comes to those kind of items, those aren't covered under a contract. It doesn't go out to contract, so those would be exempt. Those are typical day-to-day issues under a certain threshold in terms of money and are just billed directly, aren't covered under contracts, and so therefore wouldn't be covered under those things.
All right. So you
can check on again, and if we have an issue, we could deal with that as well.
Okay, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hine, in this case, we're not including consent, so it's just about disclosure. And if that ownership has been disclosed to the owners previously, there would be no need to continually disclose it because it isn't a consent issue. It's just saying if there is an ownership, it's been disclosed. And I'm wondering if you even need a time. Can't you just say prior to work beginning so that it's not about time?
Okay. Well, Senator Bonoff, originally we had it on the scratch notes prior to the work commencing. Is that, you feel it's good enough? Or not? I'll tell you, here's what we're going to do, because we need to come to a vote on
right.
this. Senator Jungbauer, I think you were okay with the 5 days.
Yes.
If you find that that is somehow unworkable, then it does have other stops. But I think we've done significant work on this here. So if Mr. Stang could read Subdivision 2, Senator Jungbauer.
Or, Mr. Chair, we could add on the end of that, unless prior disclosure occurred as well. Then you're exempt from that 5 days. I think you would
that.
Be.
Okay.
Well,
okay, so, Mr. Stang is going to read the subdivision with the amendment, and I guess this will be my amendment. I'll offer this amendment.
My only question, Mr. Chairman, is whether we're tying it to 5 days prior to commencement of work or execution of a contract.
He wants it.
I want it on a contract, Mr. Chair, because that would be the only time I see that people need some time to look at something. If it's something small in work, if they, like I said, if we had prior disclosure or other things, they can go ahead and do the work. But if it's a contract, I'm only seeing these problems, members, on large contracts, insurance things, those kinds of things. I'm not seeing it in little details, so.
Okay. Would you like to read subdivision two?
The sentence would you read as follows, or the subdivision. No property manager or property management company having an interest directly or indirectly in a construction firm, salvage firm, or appraisal firm may hire the directly or indirectly owned construction firm, salvage firm, or appraisal firm to perform work on a managed property unless the interest has been disclosed in writing to the owner or owners at least 5 days prior to the execution of a contract for the work.
Period. Okay, members, that's how the subdivision would read. Senator, does that work for you?
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I'm still going to object to that language because oftentimes you get a contract put in front of you, you're trying to deal with a big issue. This says that you have to have a five-day waiting period in essence, and I think that that's an undue restriction. So I would vote against the amendment, even though I believe in the intent and I think you're on the right track. I think that's a restriction that you don't need to impose.
Okay. Any comments, Senator Jungbauer?
He disagrees.
Again, Mr. Chair, members, Senator Bonoff, I want people to have some time. I'm pretty open on the time when you're dealing with the kind of contract that this legislation's intended for people to understand. And I honestly don't think that presenting something of a disclosure to somebody instantaneously would give them time to even think about it. And you think about our refi laws and stuff like that, even if we wanted to go down to a three-day right of rescission kind of thing, keeping that time frame in mind if we want to put three instead of five. But I don't honestly think that owners, especially people that run these associations, have time to think about it right away. They need time to think, what are the implications of this? What am I really looking at here?
Senator Bonoff, does it make you feel comfortable if we make it 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
It does? Okay.
Works for me.
I'll amend my amendment to make it 3 days rather than five, and then we would like to come to a vote. Senator Reiner, no question then? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say, those of us who have spent time in real estate, we have those provisions everywhere, so I think it's a good suggestion.
Okay. Then, seeing no further discussion on the Gerlach Amendment as written or as read by Mr. Stang, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? And the motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. So now, members, do we have any final questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, then Senator Jungbauer moves that Senate File 524 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
As opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is recommended, Senate File 524, as amended, is recommended to pass and referred to the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee. So, members, thank you very much for your patience. We went 2 minutes over, but I'm you know.
You have wrecked my reputation, members.
Senator Jungbauer, I hope we helped your bill and not damaged it. This committee is adjourned.
I know.